So our reading this morning is a poem by Maya Angelou. It's called Alone. Lying, thinking last night, how to find my soul a home where water is not thirsty and bread loaf is not stone, I came up with one thing, and I don't believe I'm wrong, that nobody, but nobody, can make it out here alone. Alone, all alone, nobody, but nobody, can make it out here alone. There are some millionaires with money they can't use. Their wives run round like banshees. Their children sing the blues. They've got expensive doctors to cure their hearts of stone, but nobody, no, nobody can make it out here alone. Alone, all alone, nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone. Now, if you listen closely, I'll tell you what I know. Storm clouds are gathering, the winds are going to blow. The race of all is suffering, and I can hear the moan, because nobody, but nobody, can make it out here alone, alone, all alone. Nobody but nobody can make it out here alone. I actually have another poem to read as well. Are you cool up there? Do you want to stay up there?
I'm really comfortable.
Okay, thank great. You. If I have any questions, I'll just refer them to Michael in the middle of that. So funny, y'all. Last night I went to a stand-up comedy show, and it's like really affected what it feels like to be up here right now, especially with the backing band. It's like a whole situation. In any case.
I won't heckle.
I know. Thank you. I know you won't. Monica's like, I will. This poem is by Kay Ryan, and it's called I Marveled at How Generally I Was Aided, which is a line actually from the autobiography of Charles Darwin. I marveled at how generally I was aided. I marvel at how generally I am aided. How frequently the availability of help is demonstrated. I've had unbridgeable distances collapse and opposite objects coalesce enough to think duress itself may be a prayer. Perhaps not chance, but need selects. And desperation works upon giraffes until their necks can reach the necessary branch. If so, help alters. Makes seven vertebrae go farther in the living generation. Help coming to us, not from the fathers, not to the children. So again, Unitarian Universalists of Santa Clarita Valley, it's so good to be with you all. It's been such a delight to put together this service, to work with the incredible volunteers that make it possible, and also because the freedom of our pulpits allows for me to just choose topics that I'm interested in. And as you will hear, I love self-help. I love it so much. And it's a little bit of a guilty pleasure for me, because I don't know if you know this, but self-help is like not cool. And I was trying to think about why it's not cool, and I think there's a bunch of different reasons. One is because it's very popular, and if it's very popular, it's like not cool. And the other thing is that our culture has so many toxic narratives about certain kinds of strength and certain kinds of weakness. And so to need help is very unallowable, even though we all live in the reality, and especially as Unitarian Universalists, we know that we need one another and that we are all out here. You know, nobody can make it all alone. But somehow there's this tension between what we're told and taught and the way we actually live our lives. And it may have to do with how successful marketing is at feeding into our needs and desires and creating this gap between the world as it is and what we're just about to get if we just buy this product or participate in this thing or something like that. So there's something about the unattainable that also is very uncool about needing help and looking for help and trying to find help. But it also is a good way to sell things. So we have that, you know, it's massively popular. It's well marketed. It's out there all the time. But it's also like you're not supposed to participate in it. So I think that is what draws me to self-help. And what I want to talk about today is based on exploring that and grappling with it a little bit, wrestling it with it with you all. And you can think whether or not you enjoy self-help yourself, I hope you will still benefit from what I'm going to talk about. So first I want to define what I mean by self-help and talk to you about some of the different lineages in the traditions of self-help. So that will take us a little bit of time to think about kind of if you imagine the section of a bookstore. So I'm dating myself right now by describing a physical bookstore. But if you imagine going and like, where would you go to find the self-help section? I'm going to suggest that that is probably too limited a view of what self-help is, that there's a more expansive way to think about it. It kind of goes across some of those borders. So first I want to talk about definitions. Then I want to talk about all the different voices that can inform self-help and what I've found helpful in identifying which voices and which messengers I think are going to be helpful and which ones aren't going to be helpful for me. And then I also want to conclude with some of the ways that self-help can be a seed that we let grow in our lives that can actually grow beyond those beginnings in like mass market uncoolness. It can grow into something that really can be incredibly powerful and healing for us as Unitarian Universalists. So that's the map. That's where we're headed today. And as I just said, I'm going to start with definitions. So self-help is really not an established category with firm boundaries. It really can describe a range of different kinds of material, from how-to guides about addressing problems, especially the problem of change, in very practical ways, to financial literacy and to navigating relationships and other kinds of like practical tips for how to adult in this life, right? How to engage adulting. And some titles that have been particularly popular or commercially successful here would be, you know, how to win friends and influence people, who moved my cheese? Are there any cheese? Do you guys remember that book, Who Moved My Cheese? And also The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So these are popular titles. And there's also a subgenre about business and leadership. But that kind of moves us away from the personal into the institutional. And self-help is usually personal. It's based on the unit of the self. And it is specifically usually focused on self-improvement. What we're going to say is kind of the change lineage of self-help. How can I change something that I want to change that affects my personal life? And so this kind of self-help not only focuses on the self, but it also argues that the person who will be do the helping is the self. So self-help teachings focus on small, practical, immediate steps that individuals can often do on our own to make changes. So we're talking about two kinds of self, the self that's being helped and the self that is doing that improving. What's interesting about this lineage, this improvement lineage in self-help, is that it's actually started to shift recently as there have been some changes in what would otherwise have been called self-help, tracking with these other generational changes that are at work in our society. And this was brought to my attention by Kate Caraway, a writer and a journalist who focuses on wellness and feelings and relationships and the self. And she wrote a piece in the New York Times a few years ago describing how self-help has shifted towards self-care, which is really kind of distinct from self-improvement. And you'll see this in social media trends with us, a new generation of authors, creators, influencers, who are really focusing on the acceptance lineage of what would otherwise have been called self-help, right? Not what can I change, but how can I accept or care for myself? How can I love myself? Which would be one of the questions of self-care. So again, the self is caring for the self. That's the unit. There are small practical steps that are largely within an individual's sphere of control, but they're really oriented towards achieving a sense of peace with the things that are already about me. This is where you would find a lot of the amazing and very healing work that happens with mindfulness, with relaxation techniques, with some kinds of yoga, and then all sorts of kind of that focus on how do I take care of myself. So both of these lineages, of course, are more focused on individuals than communities or institutions or cultures, which also means that they are really well set up for the buying and selling pieces of self-help, right? The business model, the revenue generation that goes into this, like going to trainings, like buying books. Some of us may remember tapes and CDs were also part of self-help. And also the businesses of self-care, right? Which is like going to the spa, buying a candle, listening to a certain meditation, which is part of navigating life's stress and anxiety. So again, these are not only part of this like I need help genre, but they're also kind of part of these like big business of helping one another. And that I think also feeds into my skepticism about self-help, because literally I'm like, are you trying to sell me something? And they're like, literally, yes. Yes, we are. And so I bring my skepticism into the genre, but I also really am eager to learn. I'm here to learn in so many ways, and I'm kind of concerned that I'm going to fall too hard for a spiritual teacher who will cast a spell over me, and then there'll be some kind of pyramid scheme. There'll be some kind of elaborate something that happens after that. So I do kind of keep myself at a remove from some of these things, while also really benefiting from what they're doing. And this is partly because after my extensive studies of self-help, I've kind of found that they all sound the same, and that a lot of what they are selling or teaching is not really complicated in theory. It's just very difficult to live out. And I think this gets to what I imagine wisdom will actually be. It's something very simple to understand that's very hard to live out every day. It's going to sound very familiar. Like a lot of different people in my life have said it to me before, but I was like not interested in hearing it. But someday I'll be ready and the message will get in. So this is why I was really interested to realize that after all of this thinking about self-help, I had basically defined self-help in two major lineages, which have been put together in many ways by many teachers. And one of them that you, I suspect, are familiar with is actually called the Serenity Prayer. How many people are familiar with the Serenity Prayer, right? Which is this really powerful, almost proverbial wisdom that's also kind of a cliche. And so to admit like, oh my gosh, the Serenity Prayer was really there for me when I was going through a hard time can feel, again, a little bit embarrassing. But at the same time, you're like, me too. Like, anyway, for those who haven't read it or heard it recently, you're welcome to come with me in it. Unitarian Universalists often allied the God at the beginning. So we just start with, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So this prayer is attributed to the Christian theologian Reinhold Niebuhr. It's been with us since the 1940s, at least. And it's been popularized in many different forms, but most effectively by our recovery communities, by Alcoholics Anonymous originally, and then through so many other 12-step peer support groups have really found this to be an effective way for people to hold on to at a very difficult time in their life and the continuing challenges of sticking with a program, these two lineages. Like, what is it that we need to change, improve, engage? What piece of that is something I can control? And then what can I not control? What do I need to live with? What do I need to accept? What do I need to love about what is? And this can happen within a religious tradition. Again, we can put that God in there, or turns out you can also find it very helpful without that. And it creates a bridge that can really connect people regardless of what we're facing. So in many ways, the Serenity Prayer distills what I've learned from so many different teachers about self-help into a very manageable daily dose of wisdom. And yet it touches on that definition that is wider than what you might think self-help would be and more profound. So this brings me to the second part of this sermon, which is about moving away from those definitions of self-help and talking a little bit about how you would find a teacher in self-help traditions. One of the most beautiful things about self-help is that it's very democratic and it's very participatory. You don't have to have a credential, although you can. You don't have to offer a certain kind of content knowledge, although again, you can. And in many ways, you really just have to have a message that people respond to, that they find helpful, that we want to hear. This means that if you are shopping around for a teacher, you can almost certainly keep looking if you haven't found one that works for you yet. You can find someone who speaks the language that resonates with you and that really speaks to whatever circumstances you're currently identifying in your life. So in recent months, I've picked up the following titles to see if they would speak my language of self-help. And I looked in my library history and I could not believe how many of these books I've been reading. I'm just going to give you a few of the titles. Build the Life You Want, Getting Unstuck, Taking the Leap, Fight Right, that's going to be a sermon for sure, Subtract, Standing at the Edge, Practical Wisdom, The Journey from Isolation to Freedom, Self-Compassion, The Power of Regret, and Being Here. And you can even kind of tell from the titles that tension at play, right? Of like something needs to change or something needs to stay the same. But it's hard to know which one is which. Personally, I found teachers from Western Buddhist traditions such as Pema Chodron and Shara Salzberg and Joan Halifax to be a very good fit for me in my Unitarian Universalist expressions. I often struggle with Western Christians. I just find they're just not as expansive as I want them to be, even when I can see they're trying to be expansive. I gravitate towards, this is going to be a shocker as well, highly educated white women with a poetic voice. And my North Star, and I think she would love that I'm using her metaphor, is Martha Beck, who is a Harvard-educated former Mormon mystic and life coach who used to write an advice column for Oprah. I mean, it does not get any better than Martha Beck for me. And the good news is, if you're interested and willing to keep trying, there really is probably someone who shares identities that you're interested in, who is contributing to this field, especially as the barriers to publication have become really eroded and people can share their message on Facebook or on Substack or kind of all of these other ways people can share their message. So the advice may not be very different, but being willing to listen to someone say it again is incredibly important. So if you haven't found that person yet and you do find this genre helpful, I hope you will keep looking until you find the person. So we've talked definitions, we've talked different voices, and with the time I have left, I just want to talk about where we go from here. Because the hardest challenge that I encounter with all of my reading about self-help is really inherent in the title itself. It focuses on the self. But I am not just a self. I am also part of a larger unit, which is my community and my relationships with that community. And when I am looking for help, I don't only want to help myself. I don't only want to be helped by myself. I want it to be something that a community is part of. I want to improve my community, and whether that means meeting with the other tenants in my building, figuring out how to respond to our landlord's latest surprise construction notice, whether it means knocking on doors for democracy, or even just participating in a creative expression, going to a public park and hearing a concert. I want to be present not only as myself, but also as a group of people who are working together. And this is why I think it's so powerful that the wisdom of that Serenity Prayer and the way that it became popularized was not only one-to-one, but also in small groups. It was small groups of people who were coming together in recovery to renew their hope that they would find the courage they needed to change together and to witness all of the back and forth that was happening as that struggle continued. Not alone. Never alone. So what I find challenging about all the beautiful teachers of self-help, even though I love it, is that this focus on the small practical steps that I can take right now is just too limited for the kind of love and possibility and care that I'm dreaming about. So I said, for those of you who read the newsletter, I said, you know, can we really change our lives with 7 small practical steps that we can start today? And the answer is like, no, not really. Because in order for this to grow, it needs to not only live with us alone. It has to live beyond us in our relationships and in our communities. Our problem that we're solving is not just today's problem, it's also tomorrow's problem and the day after that, which is where we really find that we need one another for each of the mountains and valleys of the day for the long haul. The individual unit of courage is going to run out of juice very quickly. It's not the only courage I need. I need the collective courage that can only come from seeing other people reaching out to one another with vulnerability and tenderness. It can only come when I challenge myself to reach out again to witness the full humanity of those around me, to see them and how their lives, to see you and how your lives matter, and how the matter of our lives makes one another possible. I need to be seen. I need to be known. I need to be missed. I need to be invited in, not once, but many times. So I'm not quite sure what this genre would be called. I'm sure it already exists. Community help, community improvement, community care, the 6 practical steps that we can take right now to do together what we know we can't do alone. So I'm sure you predicted where I was going with this, but the only thing better and richer, wiser and deeper and more lasting than self-help is collective help. It's rooms like this one, where joys and sorrows are shared and witnessed, and where we practice our withness, our ability to be with ourselves and one another's through life's peaks and valleys, through our joys and sorrows, where we come together to reach out beyond ourselves, to accept and encourage one another, even when it's hard and we're not quite sure we want to come back. We need places where we can try out whatever newest technique we've learned for ourselves in the testing ground of the world. And not just the world out there somewhere else, some other day, some other time, but the world right here, right now, these real neighbors, the people who know us by name. The peace builder, John Paul Lederach, one of my wisest teachers, whose voice we need so much right now, here across the world, he wrote recently that courage comes from encouragement. It comes from the encouragement of people who are finding a way to stay connected across our differences, to shut the door on harm, to interrupt and stop it, and also to share our visions of improvement for ourselves and one another. So you can tell me that my fundamental unit of being is solitary, that the borders of my body end at my fingertips and my toes. You can tell me that, but it just doesn't match my life experience, which is so fundamentally tied up and entangled with the space between us, with how we fill it with hope and possibility and misunderstanding and challenge, and how we reach out to one another to find ourselves again and again. Like our poets this morning, I think of how generally I have been aided, of all the people who have helped me to be me. The congregations, schools, classrooms, the circles of ordinary people who have reconstituted the world so many times and are doing it again right now. If our fundamental unit of being isn't solitary, it's relational and communal, it's a group, it's a we, then self-help will always be a seed that we have to grow. The poet tells us, lying, thinking last night, how to find my soul a home where water is not thirsty and bread loaf is not a stone. I came up with one thing, and I don't believe I'm wrong, that nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone. The good news is we do not have to make it out here alone. And if your life is presenting you with a chance to change today, with that self-improvement lineage of help, I hope today is the day we can encourage you to do the next right thing. And if your life is not presenting you with all the evidence you need to know right now that you deserve to be safe, that you deserve to be loved and cared for just as you are, I hope that you find the serenity here to accept that gift, which does not change. Today, we, the largest we, the widest embrace of our collective community, can walk together on that journey between change and acceptance. And I hope we choose to keep on growing, keep helping one another to grow, and keep growing in our wisdom on the path we share. May we be the ones to make it so.